Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're going to be taking a look at home improvement. Do you have a plan for improving your home, or are you like me a lot of the time, or other people who wait until something goes wrong and then you try to fix it after the fact? Not always the best way to do it. And John Freiberger back with us today to sort of guide you and I along here a little bit. He's a Wisconsin registered home inspector, specializes in evaluating older structures, and he has some great ideas for making a plan to get your home more energy efficient, easier to maintain, and more attractive as well. And of course, he's here to answer your home improvement questions, so I hope you'll join in. You can call us with your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. John, welcome back. Good to have you with us again.
Great to be back with you, Larry.
So why is it a good idea to have a home improvement plan as opposed to the Larry Mueller plan of in action?
Well, there's one thing that we really believe in here in Wisconsin, Larry. Whether we're Republicans, Democrats, Lutherans, or Catholics, we all believe in the bottom line in our checkbook.
Yeah.
And we like to see a healthy bottom line. And a lot of times when we're looking at our houses, we need to think about efficiency. Now, there's a lot of different efficiencies. There's energy efficiency, there's ease of maintenance, there's this or that. And when we look at our houses, we know if we sit down there on one of these cold December nights with a Tom and Jerry next to us and start making a list of what our dream house looks like, it might be the house we're in if we could make a few improvements.
Yeah.
The problem with making improvements is we have to have a plan to do it.
Yeah.
And that plan can get a little bit complex. So people need to actually think. So when we do home inspections with people, we ask people to come up with a 5 or even a 10-year plan. So they're just buying this house today, Larry.
Yeah.
But we want them to know, want them to think about what do they want this house to look like? How do they want to perform 5 years from now? And we want them to make a list. Then we want them to make a schedule about how they're going to achieve that. Now, schedule doesn't mean I'm going to paint the siding in June. It means that if I'm going to air seal the attic, what am I going to do with the chimney? Well, if I want to get rid of the chimney, do I have to go to a power vented water heater and furnace, et cetera, et cetera?
Yeah.
If I'm taking the roof off of a mid-century modern house with cathedral ceilings with 1950s insulation, do I want to insulate on top of that roof before I put the new shingles on? Now, if I put the new shingles on and then the next year I decide to insulate, well, how am I going to do that? And we run into this a lot. We see people who are doing things sort of in the wrong order, and that's not economically efficient.
Yeah. What about just making the home look a little more beautiful or give it more curb appeal?
Well, I think that's part of economic efficiency, isn't it? I mean, we know how home prices are increasing all over Wisconsin. The central urban market in Madison is just terrible.
Yeah.
As far as the increases. But even in northern Wisconsin, we've seen during the midst of the recession, houses, the average sale price of a house in northern Wisconsin was $99,000. Today it's $133,000. So $33,000 in gain on a fairly inexpensive house in northern Wisconsin. So curb appeal makes a big difference, because if you then want to put that house on the market, when the people drive up, before they reach for their checkbook for that $133,000, they've got to fall in love a little bit with that house. And of course, energy efficiency makes a big difference now, especially when we get to the rural areas where people are paying 3 times as much for BTUs because they're using LP.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a big, big difference. I had some experience with LP years ago, and it is a lot more expensive.
It certainly is. If we could improve the efficiency of our rural homes, we'd be a lot further ahead as far as things like global warming, general hydrocarbon use, than if we work on the city homes.
Well, we have some callers online with some questions, some that relate to right exactly what you've been talking about, I think, John. So Dawn in Saukville's been waiting a bit. Let's go to Dawn. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I'm desperately looking for a plumber inspector for a house that I wish to purchase, and I'm talking to friends and family. Nobody knows of anybody. If you could help me out with finding a plumber inspector in Ozaukee or Washington County. And then just wondering about, I'm questioning whether I should put new siding on my 1970s ranch house or not.
Okay.
If it's really worth doing that wrap or just to paint it for a couple of years and then put siding on it. And then if you could address mold issues and roofs from the summer that we've had, reference attic insulation getting moldy and stuff and what to do. Like you said, you want to start in the right position versus doing it backwards.
So you're thinking about selling the house you were just talking about, Dawn?
Yes.
In the next year?
Correct.
Okay.
Okay. Now, as far as plumbing inspections, the best and most knowledgeable person is always going to be a licensed plumber. But there are plumbers and there are plumbers. You may have to call a couple of guys, but you're in an area with a lot of good quality, you know, Ozaukee, Washington County. There's a lot of people down there that know what they're doing. So I would start with a plumber. The other thing you can look at is a Wisconsin registered home inspector. Now, if you're looking for a home inspector, the best thing to do is to go to either WAHI, W-A-H-I, Wisconsin Association of Home Inspectors, .org, and that's going to have a list of home inspectors in your area. And in many cases, there is a profile. And you may find that Fred Smith or somebody down there is an expert in looking at plumbing. The other place to look is ASHI, American Society of Home Inspectors. So ASHI.org. And again, you'll be able to look for people who are local to you. And you may be able to find people with special talents in the plumbing area. And if we've got mold in the attic, that's a little worrisome too.
Yeah.
And I think you need some professional advice there. The nice things about home inspectors versus, say, calling an insulation contractor is the home inspector has only one client, and that is you. The insulation inspector may have something he wants to sell you or she wants to sell you. So getting an independent appraisal from a licensed home inspector is a good idea. The reason I suggest going to WAHI and ASHI is the men and women who join the professional organizations actually follow the standards of practice of those organizations, which exceeds their responsibilities under the Wisconsin law. Also, they're paying several hundred dollars a year for a membership. They're reading the magazines, and they're more likely really to be up on their education on some of the latest issues in home inspection. So going to these professionals would be a good place to start. Now, the mold in the attic, I think, can't diagnose that over the air, and there what I'm suggesting is you find a home inspector that knows things about air sealing, etc. The other thing we can take a look at if we have mold in the attic is, have you ever had an energy inspection on this house?
Have you ever had one, Dawn?
No, not at all. I'm talking about two houses, and the one with the mold is my father's house. Which is
okay. Well, I think your father's house probably needs to spend some money and do an energy inspection. December, January, February are great times to do it. Go to Focus on Energy. Find, hopefully, an independent inspector to have that looked at, because mold in the attic can mean that roof sheathing and things are going to deteriorate rapidly. Now, as far as siding your house, what do you have on that house right now? Is it 1970s wood siding?
No, it's that old flat. What is it? I don't even know the different kinds of it. not aluminum, but the other one that they used to use.
Oh, it's a vinyl siding?
Vinyl siding. Thank you.
An old, okay. So it's an old vinyl siding. So it's probably getting pretty close to the end of its useful life. I would go ahead and get some prices on it. It isn't going to cost you anything. When you have somebody install vinyl siding, many, many people do it wrong. So go online to the Vinyl Siding Institute and download their installation instructions. Also remember that there are at least three different levels of vinyl siding. There's cheap, very cheap, and then there's good quality. In the ear of the big box store, cheap and very cheap are what a lot of people are offering. That's not what you want. You want something that is really good quality. So do some research, go online, take a look at how vinyl siding is graded, take a look at manufacturers, Google the manufacturers for product information, what people think about them, are they a 4-star, 5-star, or a 1-star manufacturer, and then go ahead and get some prices, and then you decide whether it's worth it.
Yeah. There we go. Thank you, Dawn, so much for calling, and good luck to you. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too, at 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. And let's go to Orville next in Fond du Lac. Hi, thank you for calling.
Yes, I have a question about replacing windows. We're looking to replace windows, and there's one company that offers a triple pane upgrade. Is that worthwhile?
It can be. Now, there's triple pane, there's triple pane. What you really want to look at is you want to look at a triple pane that has a low E coating on at least two of the panes, plus you want to have an argon or krypton gas. You're going to, when you take a look at the U factor, at the thermal transmission factor, that is going to allow you to judge between one window and another. You know, if one is a 0.27 and one is a 0.19, well, that 1.9 is a significant improvement. Some of the other things you have to think about is, do you have condensation problems in your house? Are you getting moisture on the inside of your windows? If so, you can actually check the Energy Star has a rating for condensation on the windows from 0 to 100. So it tells you whether it has more or less resistance. Now, really, it's really the same thing as U factor, because the window gets colder quicker is going to condense out more. So do a little bit of research. Take a look at the prices between them. But it is something that in some parts of the world, such as Alaska, there aren't a lot of people that don't have triple panes.
Yeah, makes sense. Orville, thank you. Judy in Green Bay, your turn. Hi, Judy.
Hello. I have a question about a roof issue. We're going to have our roof replaced in the next year or two, and we've had an estimate. And one of the things he's talking about is cutting. We have a ridgeline vent right now, but he said it's older, it's narrower than what they would do. And he's talking about enlarging it. He's talking about cutting it 1.5 inches on each side of the peak. Is there any reason to be concerned about that in terms of the structural integrity of the roof or something we should be aware of?
No, there shouldn't be. Now, 1.5 inches on each side of the roof sounds a little bit large, because if I'm remembering like GAF snow guard, I believe that the total opening is 1.5 inches. What you may want to do is ask him what ridge vent he's planning on using, and then go to their website and take a look at the installation instructions. Maybe he only needs to take 1 inch out of each side. I don't know. But we want to follow the installation instructions. It's okay to exceed them, you know, better side. But we always tell consumers, if you're going to pay for something, know what you're actually buying and know how it is supposed to be installed. And it is so easy to, again, using GAF as an example, to go to their website, look at all their different shingles, all their different venting, download the technical bulletins, download the installation instructions. You can educate yourself to the extent that you don't know how to hold the hammer, maybe, but certainly on paper, you know as much as the person who is selling you this product. And we are seeing so much litigation right now with siding that's put on wrong, windows that are installed wrong, roofs that are installed wrong. We really need to educate the consumers of Wisconsin to protect themselves by educating themselves. And any good company is going to have very thorough instructions online that are easy for a layman to understand, Judy. So do a little bit of research, and you should be just absolutely fine.
All right. Thank you, Judy. Appreciate the call. Brian in Gotham, your turn. Hi, Brian.
Hey, I purchased a house in this last year, and this is my first winter in it.
Okay.
It's a stick build. It was built in 2013. This winter, we had a lot of condensation with on the windows and within the home. And I was wondering what could cause that. I did get dehumidifiers now, which seemed to take care of it. So any ideas why that would be?
Well, Brian, basically any house in Wisconsin, even with the very expensive three-pane windows that Orville's going to purchase, is going to get condensation at some point. What controls condensation are two factors. One is the temperature outside, and the other is how much humidity there is inside. Now, most houses in Wisconsin are about 40% during the winter. At 40% relative indoor humidity at 70 degrees indoors, when your glass hits 43 degrees, you're going to get condensation. Now, if it's 15 below zero, you're going to have some pretty good windows to not have them go to 43 degrees. So the windows on your house, you know, they might be sort of the typical half-inch vinyl, you know, thermal panes, which aren't great. But the other thing you need to check for is, now it sounds like you bought a dehumidifier. Is that correct?
Correct. Yeah,
correct. And you're running that. And try to get the house down to 40% or maybe 38 or 37. You get below 30, it starts getting uncomfortable in the house. That is going to help. One of the things to look for is, why do we have so much moisture in the house? So do we have open fish tanks? Do we have a lot of pets? Do we have six children? All of these
showers.
Things. Showers. Exhaust fans that don't work terribly well. So we need to try to figure out, if you're having trouble controlling the humidity, why are you having trouble? Well, it's because we're getting a lot of moisture gain, and then you're going to have to do some thinking to try to figure out why things are getting wet.
Just even in the shower, if you are in the bath area, if your ventilation system isn't working very well, it's turning on, but it's not doing the job, then you could have some moisture problems just on that.
Even if it's a fairly decent, say, a 90 CFM fan, Larry, a lot of people need to run that 15 minutes after the shower's over. Now, one thing that Brian can purchase is he can switch out just the plain old on-off switch with these little mini timers. So you just sort of press the button to run it 15 or 20 or 30 minutes after you get out of the shower and see if things like that help.
Yeah, makes good sense. Brian, I hope that helps. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. John Freiberger, our guest today, Wisconsin Registered Home Inspector. He owns Freiberger and Associates of Fitchburg and Madison. I'm Larry Mueller. Tyler Ditter, our engineer today. Jill Nadeau, our producer on the Ideas Network. We're talking home improvement today and developing a home improvement plan with our guest, John Freiberger, of Freiberger and Associates. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks for joining in. I think there's one open line at 800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Kevin in Bellevue, Iowa, we'll give you a chance now. Thanks for calling, Kevin.
Good morning, guys. Great to talk to you. So I have a 68 home. It's brick on three sides. So it has limited insulation in the sidewalls. I've extended it. I've made the house a little bigger, did the Visqueen, did the all the insulation in the walls and things like that. I'm paying about, I'm guessing, $800 in propane. I know it's a little tighter. The windows are fairly new. My question is two things. Number one, there's not a lot of insulation in these outside walls due to different reasons. I don't know if there's any way to really improve the sidewalls, or most of the heat's lost through the ceiling up through the roof. And then the second question is about radon and how to either test or make sure that the radon test is accurate so you're not spending money you don't have to, and his thoughts on radon mitigation or testing.
Okay,
certainly. I think that you're already suspecting, Kevin, that heat rising up through the attic insulation, and sometimes even more importantly, air that is going up there. Now, you've got a 1968 house. It is not a very tight house. I expect that we have a lot of air that is escaping up into the attic, even if you do have Visqueen underneath your plaster or drywall. So I would probably start out with an energy inspection with a blower door test. And I think that what you're going to find is that it's going to pay to put money into the attic to completely air seal the attic and insulate it and vent it well. I have a real concern with adding a lot of insulation into walls that have brick exterior veneers. Because in 1968, I'm 99% sure that if you go out and inspect your brick, you are not going to find any weeps at all down at the base. So that water that works its way through that brick veneer has to dry. Now, it can dry to the outside, obviously, It can dry a little bit to the inside, but not much. But if you have heat loss from your house during the winter, that does a really good job of drying out that brick. If we insulate our sidewalls really, really heavily, suddenly our brick doesn't dry. And then all of a sudden we're getting frostballing and things. So I would really look at the attic first. My guess is that if you have a really well-sealed attic, and the way I explain a really well-sealed attic is as if somebody showed up with a giant styrofoam cooler and put it over the top of your house. That's how effective I want it to be. I want it to be insulated to R50 to R60, and I want just about zero air movement from the occupied space into the attic. So I would start there. You're going to need some professional advice. A home inspector in Iowa who has thermal imaging can certainly help, but a blower door test is really fairly essential. So you're probably going to have to find an energy inspector there in Iowa can help you. Now, as far as radon, radon is the second largest cause of lung cancer in the United States. It is highly, highly variable depending upon the type of soil that your house is constructed in. You can actually do your own radon testing. And what I suggest people do is go online, get a six-month Alpha Tracker test kit. It's going to cost you maybe $75 to $125. Put it in the basement from midwinter to midsummer. Because when the furnace goes on, when the air conditioning goes on, when you open the air out the house in May, changes the radon levels. So if you do a half-year, six-month test where you're getting the heating season, the cooling season, and the not really mechanically ventilating season, that is going to give you an idea of what we really have for radon. Then I would take a look at using the European standard. The U.S. action is at 3.8. In Europe, it's 2.6. I really like to see houses at 2.5 and below. There are lots of ways of doing radon mitigation. It depends upon the house, and there you would need to consult with a specialty contractor. Does that answer it all for you?
Can I say one thing, and I totally agree with where you're coming from. It makes a lot of sense. I will say I didn't put Viscreen around this house, just a little part of the addition. But in the attic, my wife and I actually did blow in about 16 inches of fluffy fiberglass or whatever on top of the bats that were in the floor joists or ceiling joists. And then we put extra soffit vents and
right.
Thought that would be a smart thing to do because they were minimal up there. So maybe I'm getting less than I think going through the ceiling.
The problem with insulation, especially fiberglass, is it does not stop air. It filters air, but it does not stop air. So we can have houses that have R50 fiberglass insulation in the house, and they are getting so much air movement through it that it acts as if it were R19. So I think it really is worth testing to see how leaky the house is, and especially how much air is going up into the attics.
That blower door test really is fascinating
to look at
after the fact. It really is.
And you can walk around the house with a smoke candle or one of the little instruments I have that actually measures the CFM coming in. You can really get an understanding of how things are leaking. We have people who don't realize that there's a 2-inch gap all the way around their chimneys that goes directly from the basement into the attic. And if things like that are not air sealed, it's basically you may as well just run a heat duct outdoors when you run your furnace. So there's a lot of things that we miss, and insulation is not the answer by itself. We really have to control air, and we really need to control vapor as well.
All right. There you go, Kevin. Thank you so much for calling, and good luck. Let's go to Bob in Madison next. Hi, Bob.
Hi, Larry and John. Thanks for the show.
Sure.
I have a 1959 house, and I suspect there's no insulation in the walls, and I know I need to get an energy audit soon, one of these days. But what I'm wondering is, if there is no insulation, how do they put insulation in?
I expect that you actually have insulation in your walls. By 1959, it was really quite common. Now, you may not have a lot of it. But typically, by 1959, what we got was a craft-faced bat, often with a mineral wool, fiberglass, or cellulose interior. And many times it was only 2 inches thick. But still, the 2 inches helps because it creates a dead airspace. So you may find that you do have some insulation in the walls. Now, when you have the energy inspection done, your energy inspector is going to be able to tell you. Because even with a camera that I have, which is not the really good energy inspector camera, because I can't afford one, I can pick out the nails in your drywall on the outside wall because they're a different temperature. So they are going to really be able to tell you if you have insulation in the walls or not, if there's gaps in the insulation, etc. And again, as we were talking with Kevin from Iowa just a moment ago, really have that attic checked. 40% of the heat loss in a house is out through the attic on average. And 1959, you've probably got a dead average house. I mean, you've had an older house, older construction techniques, no air sealing. You may find that by the time you air seal and insulate the attic, it does not pay to put any more money into the walls of that house because you've lowered your heating bill and your cooling bill so much that there's no real payback.
No. Bob, does that help?
Well, I did go up in the attic a few years ago and blew in about, I guess, 16 to 24 inches of insulation.
Right, again, but air leakage is our big problem. We need to know how much air leakage we have, and the only way to do that is to do a blower door test where we depressurize the house to 50 pascals to see how much air is moving. If that air is moving right past or right through that insulation, then that insulation isn't doing much.
Yeah. And a test like that, I think, what, $300 to $500, $600?
$300 to $500, I would say, unless it's a really, really large house or something.
All right. So there you go, Bob. Thank you so much. Appreciate your call. And let's turn to Todd in La Crosse next. Hi, Todd.
Hello. Hello. Hi. Thanks. Yes, I have a problem. I hope it's not too big, but it's really mystifying me. We have a long vertical run of a gutter. As the water melts off of the roof on a warm day, it goes down a vertical for a two-story house. And when it gets to the bottom, it freezes. And then last winter and this one, that whole vertical thing fills with ice. I'm literally, bursting it.
Right.
Is there any... I'm thinking heat cable or something, but it might not be too convenient. But what do I do to take care of that?
Well, we've got two ways of looking at it. One is, let's put a Band-Aid on it. And you are correct. The heat cable is the Band-Aid. I would have an electrician come in and put a GFCI outlet in one or two or three locations on the exterior so you've got a good safe outlet. And then run your heat tape if you need in the gutters and down the downspout. And that way you're going to have your drainage. So that's the Band-Aid. Now, the other thing we can look at is actually curing the patient. Now, you said that water is melting off the roof and then freezing. Well, we don't want water melting off our roof. If we have water melting off our roof, that means we lack insulation and we lack air sealing, and our attic is getting too warm. So when the snow sits on the roof is above 32 degrees, and it melts and it runs down, and then usually freezes in the gutters or the downspouts. So again, sounding like a broken record here, but I really suggest that you go to Focus on Energy and have an energy audit done on the house. Because rather than just put a Band-Aid on it, if you're spending money heating the great outdoors and melting snow off your roof by writing checks to the utility company, let's try to get rid of that problem instead. So I think I would make the $300 to $500 investment on a good energy audit of the house. Now, that is going to have the blower door test Larry and I have been talking about, plus the thermal imaging that I've mentioned. So they can go over every square foot of the exterior of that house and tell you what temperature various parts of your roof are on that given day, compare that to the exterior, to the walls, etc., and basically define for you pretty precisely where your energy loss issues are and then how to rectify that.
There you go. Thank you so much for calling. Harriet in Madison, hello to you.
Hello. I have a 1953 small house with some wet basement problems, and I'm not experienced in home maintenance, I guess.
Sure.
And so would a home inspector be who I should call to find out what are the problems, why is the basement wet, and would that person be able to tell me who might be able to take care of it? Because, there are different different kinds of companies that attack the problem and have no idea what which is the right one to call and what it would cost.
Yes, and again, Harriet, as I said earlier, we've got the two professional associations, WAHI.org and ASHI.org, where you can look up Madison or Dane County home inspectors and then find one that really knows a lot about basement seepage. Now, most home inspectors know about basement seepage because it's one of the things that they are required to put into their inspection reports according to the administrative code in Wisconsin. So basically, they're going to take a look at drainage outside. They're going to look at your downspouts. They're going to try to figure out whether this is surface moisture getting into the basement that can be controlled in some way, or is it perhaps hydrostatic head pressure? That is, the water table at some points actually gets higher than your basement floor.
Depending on where you are in Madison, that could be the issue, given our wet year last year.
That is correct. In many areas, the water table has come up many, many, many feet. In my own neighborhood, it's come up 8 feet. And one of my neighbors is actually moving his furnace and electrical panel out of his basement. Because he's that worried about the groundwater seepage. So hydrostatic head pressure is a big problem. Now, there are also our specialty contractors in the Madison area. Xander Solutions would be one. Badger Basements would be another. And there are several others out there. These people will come and look at your house for free and give you a quote for free. You can compare the quotes. One of them will make more sense than the other, and of course one is more economically efficient, and that is not going to cost you anything. I've dealt with these firms, or my clients have dealt with these firms over the years, and we found them to be reputable and consumer oriented. So that gives you contractors would be one thing, home inspectors would be another. I would start with a home inspector if you can find the right person, because then you're really going to be educated and you can ask the contractors the right questions.
Yeah, that's and again, to find a good home inspector here in Madison, pretty easy.
It certainly is. American Society of Home Inspectors website, or the Wisconsin Association of Home Inspectors website. And they will really, we had a friend of mine bought a restaurant in northern Wisconsin. He could find no one. So he emailed WAHI and they searched and searched until they found the right inspector for his commercial inspection up north. So these associations are very, very consumer friendly. They will really work for you.
And good luck, Harriet. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Dean emailed to say he just discovered his radon count is 29. What do you suggest he do? I wonder if it's 2.9. Is it 29, Jill? Yeah, he said 29.
Well, that's nice. He doesn't have to use electricity because his house glows in the dark.
I think he means 2.9.
They could be 29, Larry.
It could?
No, it could be 29. If it is, Dean, if your house is 29, it's dangerous. And you need to talk to a mitigation contractor very, very soon. And you may need multiple. The problem with radon when it's that high, and Larry, where we find it that high, Shorewood in near Madison has some real problems because it's on fractured bedrock. Areas around Sun Prairie where they're in sand have some real problems. So we actually found, I think we found one house. It was the 24-hour test. It was 111.
Oh!
Yeah, very, very dangerous when things get to that level. Now, hopefully that's in the basement and not as bad upstairs, and Dean has a nice old leaky house. But we have to take a look at trying to control the radon where it enters the basement. But the other thing we may have to do is put a heat recovery vent system, an HRV system, in the house so that we can do air changes in the winter. In the summer, we open the windows.
Yeah.
But in the winter, some houses have basically no real incoming air except for the drafts they're trying to get rid of. So if Dean's radon is that high, he needs to start talking to some good experts soon and get that rectified.
And frankly, the process of getting rid of it can be, in some cases, relatively simple and not cost all that much money.
That's correct. Some houses, Larry, have a radon collection system already. It's called a sump pit and drain tiles. So what it's doing is collecting that water around the foundation. It's also collecting the radon and introducing it directly into the basement. Well, if we seal that sump pit and then put a depressurization fan on it, presto, we've changed the sump pit and drain tile into a radon mitigation system. But even when we mitigate radon through those sorts of mechanical means, I then want to retest the house.
Yeah.
And I want to do a 6-month because I want to see whether we really did it. And I think in the future, Larry, people with new houses, almost everybody needs an HRV, a heat recovery vent system. It used to be called also air-to-air heat exchangers in the old days. And of course, one of the best ones in the U.S. is actually made here in Madison, so we know it works in Wisconsin winters. But we really need to take a look at controlling the air quality in our house, and not just for radon. But we've got VOCs, we've got too much CO sometimes in a modern house. So most of our people are calling in saying, I've got an old leaky house. Well, that's great. They've got good fresh air. But once you tighten up these houses, you have to be a little bit careful. And if you're getting a brand new house that actually has only 1/2 air change per hour, well, you may have a house with a lot of stagnant air, radon, VOCs, and other things. So we'll maybe do some other program at some point where we can talk about all the issues that we have with new homes.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Well, John in Mequon has a question for you, so let's go there. John, hi.
Hi, Larry and guest. Actually, I just thought of a second quick question that I'll put on board. But my first is the joists in the basements. Where they meet the exterior wall, of course, between them is the standard fiberglass insulation, which for me, in a not a rural community, but a suburb of Mequon, seems to be a wonderful house or a haven for mice. And they'll nest in there, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering, is there a hardboard that I might be custom cut in there and maybe adhesive or foam? Expansive foam to put mm-hmm. them in place of a fiberglass that might be equally to the R value?
Actually, John, your spray foam is going to be so much better in every possible way. Now, the question is, why do you have mice? Well, Mickey's wandering around outside, and he feels this warm puff of air coming at him. And Mickey goes, you know, it's cold out here. I think John's got a hole in the house. I'm going to follow that warm air right inside. So basically, we are getting rodents, and a rodent can squeeze through just a tiny, tiny, tiny little space.
Size of a dime.
That's right. Just a tiny little space. And older houses, we didn't have the sill seal and all the other things. So sometimes we've got boards, straight boards, sitting on Ripley concrete. So the area you're talking about, we call a sill box. And if you pull a piece of that fiberglass out of that sill box, you're probably going to find the black side of it is dirt colored. It's going to be all gray. And remember, we talked earlier about fiberglass being, well, it insulates, but it also acts as a filter because it isn't an air barrier. What you really want in those sill boxes is you want an air barrier. So spray foam insulation is really the way to go. At least R19, maybe to R30, that is going to give you a vapor barrier. It's going to give you an air barrier. Now, the only other question I have to ask, though, John, is do you have any brick or stone on the exterior of that house?
No, the exterior really is a stucco, hard stucco.
Okay, and how old is your house?
89.
1989. Okay, I think that then you are going to be okay, especially if it's back drain stucco. As we chatted with a fellow earlier that had the brick exterior, and we're always worried about stopping drying. So if you had a 1959 house with the brick exterior with no weeps, then I would say, no, where the brick or stone is, we're going to stay with the fiberglass because we actually want that air leakage. But in your house, you don't want any air leakage, so I think your instinct about going to spray foam is really the right way to go. Not terribly expensive. Now, remember to go to Focus on Energy. And I guess, Larry, we should, we keep talking about going to Focus on Energy, finding the inspector. We need to go to Focus on Energy to find our rebates.
Yes.
And some of you people with these really old houses that really leak badly, there are some whole house rebates, which I think I haven't been on the website in a while, but there are some whole house rebates where you can get more than just like the $75 for this or that. But if you can decrease your heat loss by something like 30%. So everybody who is doing this work, go to Focus on Energy, take a look at the rebates. You know, this whole program is supposed to be about efficiency, and part of that is our economic efficiency again. We want to spend this money so we spend less money in the future, but if we can get a rebate, let's get a rebate.
I was thinking, just 2 days ago, I was going through some old paperwork, and I found check stub, essentially, for the rebate that I had, and it was $950 or something like that.
That's a very nice rebate.
A very nice rebate. And not that you're going to get $950, John, but you never know. check it out. Oh, thanks so much for that call. John Freiberger, our guest today, Wisconsin registered home inspector. His firm, Freiberger and Associates, is located in Fitchburg and works in Madison and, frankly, he works around the state and in a lot of different places. Great to have him with us, and he's going to be with us right up till 12:30 here on The Ideas. Larry Mueller here talking home improvement with John Freiberger of Freiberger and Associates of Fitchburg and Madison. Thanks for joining in. Questions for John, give a call at 800-642-1234, email at ideas@wpr.org. And let's go to Todd in Hartford next. Todd, hi, thanks for calling.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call, Larry. I have a raised ranch home with the garage that is under the living space, and I have a problem with moisture on the cinder block wall that is below grade, and it really only happens during the summertime when the weather is humid, and it's just like condensation that collects on the wall. And I'm wondering if I can use like a water sealing paint to block that so it doesn't come in and collect on the floor.
Well, if what we have there is condensation, what we're going to have is we're going to have a prettier, well-painted wall with condensation on it instead of an unpainted wall. So the waterproofing applied on the interior. First, waterproofing applied on the interior never works, ever. Waterproofing has to be put on the exterior walls where the pressure, the water or vapor pressure, pushes it tight, not pushes it loose. So if we've got a condensation issue in the garage, we probably need to take a look at ventilation or dehumidification. Now, is this a big garage, and is it?
It's a two-car.
Two-car, and you're using it every day.
Correct.
All right. So in the summer, what's happening is the door is opening and closing. This nice, humid outside July, moisture-laden air comes into the garage, and then it hits the wall, which is 55 degrees, and it condenses out moisture. Yeah, so that is really a difficulty. So what we have to do, talked earlier about moisture on windows, and just thinking your cinder block is a particularly opaque window, is what we need to do is we need to raise the surface temperature. And one way of doing that would be to install a extruded polystyrene foam insulation on the interior so that the interior of the garage is closer to the air temperature, and that 55 degree temperature that the soil is keeping the cinder block at is not the effective interface with our air. Now, what you can do, I don't know how nice you want this garage to look, but what you could do is you could have an exterior insulation finish system contractor come in, EIFS or IFS, it's called, and they can adhere, let's say, an inch and a half of foam to the wall, and then they'd put mesh over it, they'd put a coat of plaster, and then a finish coat over it, and basically you would have what looked like a beautifully plastered garage in your basement. It would be warmer in the winter, and it would not condense out in the summer.
That's pretty good. Or if you didn't want to go that route, you could just, if you don't care what the wall looks like.
You can simply put on the extruded poly. You want to make sure that you have the one-hour fire barrier on your garage, because if poly burns, it gives off some really nasty gases. So you want to make sure the door between the house and the garage is airtight and a B-label fire door. You'd want to make sure that the ceiling is correctly drywalled, etc. But changing the temperature so that it is above the point where the moisture condenses out is the key for windows, for walls, for basically for anything.
Yeah, there you go, Todd. Thank you so much for calling. And let's go to Sue in Mequon next. Hi, Sue.
Hi, Larry. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My husband and I have a Lannenstone house, and I'd say in the last 5 to 10 years, we added a screen porch. And the top of the screen porch is flat, and it's got a rubber membrane on it. And now we've noticed that there's a little kind of leakage right inside the, or some spotting inside the front door.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering, is there some kind of caulk that we would use to make sure that that lip of the membrane is really sticking to the house?
The problem may not be the membrane or where the membrane meets the stone. Most likely what is happening is every stone and brick veneer leaks. Generally, brick veneer will leak in 15 seconds if you spray it with a hose. Your Lannan stone also leaks. So what is happening is that water is running down in back of the Lannan stone and then it is dripping into the house. So what the contractor failed to do when they built that porch is he forgot to put in a flashing that would collect water that's running down the backside of the stone and then provide flashing and weep so that would drain out on top of the membrane. So actually, you really need a mason here. So you're going to have to find a mason who works with Lannan stone who can basically put in the flashing that you need. Because you could caulk and caulk and caulk and caulk, and my guess is you are still going to have occasional leaks, especially when the rain is coming and hitting and causing water to run down the wall.
So there you go. I hope that helps, Sue. Thank you very much for calling. And Aaron in Grafton, your turn. Hi, Aaron.
Hi. I'll try to make a long story short. I have a concrete block, very small house that my husband took off the top, like attic that was wood, put another floor on plus an attic. The concrete block was built in the 50s. He was doing it himself. He passed away, and it's not connected to the bottom. Everything's closed off, but that's about it. No insulation, no anything. I'm concerned that, you know, there's problems on the first floor with the concrete block. There's a lot of moisture problems, it seems like. I'm just wondering who do I don't want to put good money, you know, after bad or whatever. Who do I get to tell me if, like, this first floor, I'm worried the first floor isn't, you know, in good shape, and to build, continue to build on the second and third. I just don't know who I would ask to tell me whether it was worth it or if I needed to somehow, I don't know.
Well, it sounds like the first question we have to ask ourselves is the first floor structurally sound or serviceable? Now, Aaron, does this house have a basement under it?
No.
Is it a crawl space?
Not that you can get to. It's built on, I forget what they call it, you know, it's brick underneath it, you know, it's about a subfloor about, you know, maybe a foot below it or less, you know, with a concrete slab.
Okay, so it's basically probably a slab on grade house or maybe slab with frost wall. Well, you can start by talking to an architect or an engineer, but that can be a little bit expensive. So again, we can think about trying to get a home inspector who knows these houses. And fortunately, you live in an area that has a lot of well-educated home inspectors because you've got the whole Milwaukee market there, you know, that can serve you in Mequon. So let's again, Wahi and Ashi, both of them.org, let's take a look at home inspectors in your area that have an expertise in concrete masonry units and have them come and inspect. Now, the great thing about concrete masonry units is that if there's a problem, they show you. I mean, concrete masonry units, if there's problems with soil settling or other weaknesses with them, they crack like mad. So they're actually pretty easy to inspect. So unless you have some really vicious cracks in the house, you're probably going to be in good shape. So let's start with the inspector. Find somebody who's well-educated, talk to him, and then you can go on from there to see whether you want to talk to an architect or an engineer, somebody that can plan out the completion of this job.
And again, Ashi is A-S-H-I?
That is correct, A-S-H-I, and Wahi, W-A-H-I.org.
In both cases. Aaron, that's a good place to start. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. We have Todd in Delafin says he has a squeaky floor under the carpet in his bedroom. Years ago on a home improvement show, he saw a product that basically is a screw that was driven through the carpet, then broken off at the surface. Have you heard of anything like this? If not, do you have suggestions? He has access to the floor from the basement.
I have not heard of that particular screw. I'm making holes in the carpet and the pad. It sounds interesting. I don't know how old the house is, so I don't think we have enough information to really answer the 13-year-old.
Question. 13-year-old.
15-year-old. So it probably has oriented strand board flooring. It's probably take up the carpet, rescrew the floor, put the carpet back down.
And he could, or he could go from underneath?
Probably not.
Okay. All right. There we go. We have many callers, or some callers online, and we're certainly going to get to your questions, Dave and Pete, with our guest today, John Freiberger. John, a Wisconsin registered home inspector. He owns Freiberger and Associates of Fitchburg and Madison. Talking with him today, and certainly looking forward to your questions at 800-642-1234 or at email at ideas@wpr.org. We'll take a look at the news, weather, find out what else is in store for us, and then we'll be back. So you stay with us. Thanks for joining us on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller, taking a look at your home today with our guest, John Freiberger, a registered home inspector. His firm, Freiberger and Associates, is located in the Fitchburg area, in Madison area. He talks and consults in the restoration and adaptive reuse of old homes and other structures, including designing thermal and air barrier systems to reduce energy consumption. All our lines are filled. We've got several good question, email questions as well. So I think we'll go to Pete in Milwaukee next. Pete, thank you for calling.
Hi. My home was built in 1914, and my water heater was installed by a plumber recently. There's an aluminum pipe that crosses over my furnace, and it's separated at the joint. Should I be concerned about it?
Yes. We actually moved you up in the line, Pete, because we were a little concerned that it was a vent connector that was loose and that you're getting CO in your house. Pete, do you have a CO detector in your house?
No.
Okay, you need to buy one for each floor, and you need to probably do that very, very soon. Now, call that plumber. They are going to come back, and they're going to fix that for you at no cost. All parts of a vent connector are to be screwed tightly together so they can't come apart. Plus, if that vent connector is longer than 6 feet, it also has to have auxiliary strapping, heat-resistant strapping, to hold it in place. So give the plumber a call, and let's hope he can actually come over here this afternoon, because if it is a vent connector, you're getting CO vented into your house when your water heater goes on.
Yeah.
So safety concern here, Pete.
Yeah.
All right.
All right. Thank you for calling. We'll go to Dave in Rhinelander now. Dave, thank you for waiting.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I understand why you moved them up. I've got a early 70s prefab house. I had some remodeling done. While they were there, they put like 1.5 inch foam board insulation on the ceiling and then sheetrock on top of that. It's only half the house. The other half, I am getting some heat leakage, so I'm getting water dams. I'm wondering, you talked about you can actually do insulation on the roof, and I'm wondering, am I further ahead to kind of have a step on the roof and have insulation up there? How would you do it? Because it means inside there's trim where whatever they put on the ceiling comes together. That would all have to be taken down and cut and then put back up on top of the sheetrock over the foam board.
Okay, so we're looking at two alternatives, if I'm understanding you correctly, Dave. One is to basically insulate the underside of the ceiling, right? And the second would be to actually move the thermal envelope from the ceiling or the attic floor to the roof. Am I correctly assessing what you're asking?
Right, and there's no attic on this. It's prefab. So.
Oh, okay. All right, great. Well, either of them are going to work. Moving the thermal envelope to the roof is going to work best. Now, we have a Wisconsin Public Radio sponsor, Kurt Building Supplies, that makes energy panels. And if you go to their site, you will see that they make insulated and non-insulated panels. Vented and non-vented insulated panels. And I would certainly put the vented panel up there. Basically, what you do is take off your shingles. These panels go over the roof in any thickness that you want, and then you shingle over them. The vented ones, we usually put a second fascia on it and ridge venting, and it works really, really great. They're a very friendly company. If you have questions, you can email Mike up there, and he will help you out with design issues. And these are, they're really very simple to work with. Any competent roofer is going to be able to put these up for you, and that then gives you pretty much an airtight system, as well as you can basically move it up to R50 if you want. Since you're way up there in Rhinelander, you're probably looking at some pretty good energy savings. Now, take a look. Larry and I mentioned focus on energy rebates. If you're looking at a 30% reduction in your heat use, you may be in for a fairly significant rebate. Does that cover everything for you?
Well, where do you look for the rebates?
Go to Focus on Energy, and you'll be able to click on a button to look at the rebates that are available.
FocusOnEnergy.com, isn't it? Is it Focus on Energy?
I thought it was .org, but just Google Wisconsin Focus on Energy.
Yeah.
And it'll pop right up for you.
Yes, it will.
Since half already has insulation against the roof, and if I went with the outside, which you're recommending,
mm-hmm.
At that juncture, there's going to be a slight step up outside, because I'm not going to do the whole roof, since I'm already insulated on half of it.
You would probably actually have to do the whole roof because of the air leakage that's going on, and that's the problem. Is air leakage is really our problem. Warm air rises, and it rises up into, you know, even if we've only got cathedral ceilings and things, it rises up into that interstitial space.
So is that doubling its cost?
I don't know. Without looking at the house, and obviously he already has part of it done one way. So someone's going to have to sit down and try to work out some costs and see what is the most effective way of doing it. But either way, take a look at Focus on Energy to see what's available for rebates.
There you go. Thank you, Dave. Appreciate it. Alex in Appleton, it's your turn. Hi, Alex.
Hi. I know you just talked about going and looking for the rebates. But I've been doing more research, and I'm not just looking for Wisconsin. I'm also looking for federal, and maybe you just have a quicker answer for me because I've been researching on and off since February. I had all new windows put into my house and a new sliding glass door and a new skylight. So are there any tax incentives, rebates, anything like that that's available for me for the 2018 tax year?
I believe that no. There was, and it's been gone for some years now, there was an up to an $8,000 federal rebate at one point. The other problem that we have is usually when you're asking for a rebate, you have to apply for the rebate before you do the work. And sometimes if it's like the 30% rebate, you have to do a pretest and then a post-test to actually qualify for that kind of money. So unfortunately, if you hadn't applied in advance, my guess is you're probably not going to get anything, but go ahead and email Focus on Energy and ask them the question. They may say, if you can provide the documentation, they may say, fine, here's a rebate for you.
Yeah, worth it for sure.
And the thing is, on Focus on Energy, things seem to change a lot. It seems that sometimes they have a dearth of people applying for money, and sometimes they're extremely busy. So you never really know, so it's always good to check with them.
Yeah, doesn't cost anything to ask. Good luck, Alex. Thanks for calling. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. Mary emailed to ask, besides aesthetics, for example, changing house color, why should you replace vinyl siding? What maintenance issues or problems would contribute to the decision to replace? And does vinyl siding have a limited life?
Okay, vinyl siding does have a limited life. As we mentioned earlier, there's cheap, very cheap, and good. And the good is going to last a lot longer than the very cheap because of the thickness, because of how it becomes less, doesn't become quite as brittle over time, etc. One of the major problems we're seeing with vinyl siding right now is the green plant growth that is developing with them. And the problem with that green plant growth, if you're seeing it on the outside of the siding, on the north and sometimes the east side of your house, it's on the inside as well. And if it's on the inside, it is busy attacking your weather-resistant barrier, the barrier that's supposed to be keeping water out of your house. And there are some new studies coming out. Now, the first study that came out of Portland, Oregon, where it's even wetter than Wisconsin. Hard to believe there's a place wetter than Wisconsin, but there is. And they are finding significant damage to houses and commercial buildings with vinyl siding, not because of the siding, but because of the deterioration of the weather-resistant barrier and back. Now, I don't know how old Mary's house is. If it was built in the 70s or 80s, it may be a very, very leaky house. So by taking off that vinyl siding, we may be able to put a good wind wrap on that house. We might be able to improve the insulation of the walls by blowing it in from the outside. So one of the main reasons I see for replacing vinyl siding is because we want to get underneath the siding and we want to seal up the wall against moisture intrusion and thermal extrusion, thermal loss. We'll put it that way.
Yeah.
So again, this is, we're talking when we started the hour, Larry, is people need to have their goals. And maybe Mary needs to start out with an energy assessment if she has an older house, and then see if perhaps there'd be some rebates. And if her siding is getting sort of old and sketchy, maybe replace it, but use that as an opportunity to improve her house as far as energy efficiency.
That makes good sense. Let's take another call. James in Sheboygan, your turn. Hi, James.
Hey, fellas. This is James in Sheboygan. I heard a caller previously talk about water freezing in his downspout. And I have the same issue at my house. And the issue I have is that my downspout falls into the shade once the sun goes behind my neighbor's house.
Yep.
And so the snow on the roof is melting because of the sun, and the downspouts are in the sun, or I'm sorry, the gutters are in the sun also. And so there's this water melting, but then around 1 o'clock in the afternoon, the downspout is blocked from the sun, and so it starts freezing. And so it wasn't an issue of heat escaping through the roof, melting the snow. It was actually a problem with the sun shade. And so my solution for that was what the caller suggested, which was a heat wire. And I just actually have mine set on a timer because I know right around 1 o'clock is when the downspout starts freezing. And that's when my heat wire goes on and just keeps it flowing until nighttime when the snow on the roof freezes again.
Yeah.
Thank you, James. The other thing that's worth mentioning is you can put your heat tape on timer, but they also have heat tape now that reads the temperature. So when it's above 32, it shuts itself off. And this is not a very exotic product. I think you can probably get it at most hardware stores. So that's probably a good note we should add for our previous caller, that if we want heat tape, rather than turning it on and off or putting on a timer, is let's just buy the type that has the internal thermostat.
Oh, interesting. James, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. We'll go to Al in Marshfield next. Hi, Al.
Well, hello. That was really quick. I just called and I'm on your program already. I have a son who bought a home, home inspection done, and I looked at it and it was very, very not well done. He has two problems that I can think of. One is the sill plates are boxed in, so you really can't, I don't know if a person can check whether or not they're actually insulated, because the house tends to be rather cool, cooler than it should be, I think, and I think there's a lot of air leakage there. It does have the particle board for siding on the outside. That has not been replaced in a number of years. So that's one issue I have, the insulation of the boxed-in sill plates. The other question, and there was an add-on for a living room, and it's a, I would say, a vaulted ceiling. So when you do crawl up into the crawl space, which is available to the back of the house, the front of the house has no access to the ceiling, vaulted ceiling, or the roofing. The roof had a new shingles put on not so long ago, but I don't think they insulated it properly, or it wasn't insulated at all. So now he's getting a little bit of moisture seeping down the, at least the west side of the wall that faces west when it gets sun. So I got two issues. I know you mentioned something about putting some type of taking the roof off, putting down some type of insulation, and raising the R value on a vaulted ceiling, perhaps, to a R rating of 50. But the other issue is the box plates, and how does a, is there a fiber optic system where a person can actually look in through small holes, drilled holes, to see whether there's insulation in those box above the sill plate.
Sill plate, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So there are bore scopes, they're called. I have one. And you make a little half-inch hole, and you can stick it in there and take a look around. The other thing you can do, and I think, again, we're going to mention focus on energy and getting an energy inspection, because thermal imaging is going to tell you a lot.
Yeah.
Because we may have fiberglass in there, but maybe leaking like mad due to air leaks. Now, when you say it's boxed in, do you mean there's a piece of wood in front of it, or is it what's called a nogged sill box, where there's actually masonry in between the floor joists?
I would say they put a frame out from the sill plate,
mm-hmm.
and then probably just use sheetrock to cover the... Well, the box, I would say.
Right. And this is in an unfinished basement where it's accessible?
It is a finished basement.
It is a finished basement. Okay. It sounds like then starting with the thermal imaging is where we can start. So we can get, again, by looking at the relative temperatures of the wall, the energy inspector is going to be able to tell you how well or poorly that is performing. And they can actually do some analysis and try to give you an idea of what is worth doing. If it's above a finished ceiling, it's going to be a little bit on the difficult side.
Yes.
But there may be some other ways of somehow stopping airflow.
All right. Thank you very much for calling, Al. Appreciate it. And let's see, Wade in Trempealeau, your turn. Hi, Wade.
Hello. Thanks for having this show.
Sure.
I've got a question related to the long-term health and ecological qualities of insulation. You know, my son built a tiny house last year, and he and his wife are very interested in health and ecology, and they actually purchased wool bats, real wool, as the insulation for their tiny house. And then I told him I'm thinking of building a cabin, and I really have heard about the benefits and like the idea of some of this closed cell polyurethane foam insulation. It seems like it'd be so effective and work so well. And he said, yeah, but even that stuff, if it's pretty inert now in its installed state, and someday that building's going to have to come down and there's going to be that stuff released into the environment. So I'm just wondering what you think about the long-term qualities of that kind of cell polyurethane.
Yeah, that's the way that is such a tough question, I tell you. It's one I've pondered because, you know, years ago we really were worried about embedded energy, reducing use of hydrocarbon-based materials, etc. And where I am on that at this point is sometimes I regret it. I regret it ethically when I tell people do the right thing. But the thing is, if you use that closed cell insulation and then use extruded poly on the exterior to get rid of the thermal bridging and then have a good exterior water barrier, there's no reason why that cabin can't be there 300 years from now. And we do have buildings that last a heck of a long time. And I think that the ethical challenge is, we don't want to spend money changing oil into insulation, but if long-term, if we can take that embedded energy in those petrochemicals and make them last for 300 years, I think that we're ethically okay. But anyone who uses recycle blue jeans or wool insulation, you know, bless them for doing it. And I certainly understand that side of the argument. So if, I guess that's one reason I do this radio program, we do the website, is I want people to do things right so what they do will last. It's expensive to do it right, but if you average that cost out over a century, which is really what I want our listeners to do, then it makes a certain amount of sense. And if we average that embedded energy over a century, well, that helps as well. And then look at how much less fuel you're going to be using in that cabin if you do it right.
Yeah, there you go. Something to think about, Wade. Thank you so much for calling. John, you mentioned your website, and it's educatedhomeowner.net. Is that right?
That is correct, Larry.
So tell us how that's going.
Well, I've been a little bit busy this fall, but hopefully in January we are going to triple the amount of material we have and make it even easier to use. So currently you can go on and say, I have a masonry question, click on the masonry file, and you'll have a bunch of things that you can download, like how do I tuck point my sandstone foundation in my old farmhouse. We're going to be adding a great deal to that. And the other thing that we're going to do is we're going to get permission to put in a whole bunch of links so that we can send you directly to the American Brick Institute, or we can send you directly to Cambridge Building Science, or we can send you directly to the Cold Climate Housing Office. And then we'll have a list of articles and things and exactly how to get there. So I'm hoping in January, when things settle down a little bit, that we can triple the size of what we're offering to the listeners.
But in the meantime, there's still a lot there. Still a lot there.
Larry, there is so much that isn't there that I want to be there that it makes me sad. But there is only so much. There's only so much time in the world, and we've had a tremendously busy fall. We literally have never been this busy before. So I'm really anxious to have some free time and to work with Enid, my IT person, and get many, many more things up there for our Wisconsin Public Radio listeners.
In the meantime, the website is called educatedhomeowner.net. There you go. Well, I tell you what, John, it's always a pleasure to have you with us, and you're going to be back when February 4th, well, Valentine's Day.
Great.
February 14th, John is going to be back to talk with you and with me again about home improvement. We'll have another topic area that we're going to sort of pick up on. We're not sure what that'll be yet, but we'll have something that fits the season for you. And I really appreciate your calls and your comments today. It's always a lot of fun. John Freiberger of Freiberger and Associates. And what's your website, Fry?
My email.
Email,
is,
sorry.
Is FREI at chorus.net.
FREI at chorus.net. Taking a look tomorrow on Garden Talk, John Hendrickson back to talk about planting for your vegetable garden and some upcoming classes for beginning market growers. So I hope you'll join us at 11 tomorrow or 6 on Saturday or online anytime. In the meantime, stay with us.